This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 9th of May 2025. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 9th of May. Before I introduce the readers, I must offer an apology for the lack of a recording last week's Chronicle. A technical issue meant that we couldn't complete the recording, so we were unable to send it out to you. Hopefully this week's edition will reach you, along with our May magazine recording, which also should have gone out last week. And I apologise again for the disruption we've had to our service over the last few weeks. Now, your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
And Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: new battle over army base, Greens and Lib Dems triumph in by-elections, and all aboard for a bus journey back in time. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was new battle over old army base. Campaign to buy back Bushfield Camp. Campaigners have launched a new initiative to buy a brownfield site earmarked for development. They have urged Winchester MP Danny Chambers to help them protect Bushfield Camp. Representatives from Buy Back Bushfield, BBB, and Save Bushfield Camp, SBC, met Dr. Chambers to voice opposition to proposals by the church commissioners to build a business park and hotel complex on the 105-acre, 43-hectare, Greenfield site. The former army base includes designated Sites of Importance for Nature Conservation, SINCs, priority habitats and protected species. The group raised concerns about the environmental damage the development might cause, its conflict with national biodiversity and climate goals, and the strain it would place on local infrastructure. The site is a crucial node within the local nature recovery network and supports endangered species, including hazel dormouse, skylarks and rare orchids. Mike Nell and Julia Stolle, representing Buy Back Bushfield, pushed for community ownership of the land to be established. Speaking after the meeting on April the 25th, Mr. Nell said, "Over 150 Winchester residents have already signed up to support the idea of buying the site for public benefit. We're conducting a community survey to explore how people want to balance wildlife protection with public access. This is about long-term stewardship, not short-term profit. Losing this space would be a tragedy for Winchester and set a terrible precedent for development on nature-rich land." Councillor Brian Lamming, Ward Councillor for Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery, speaking on behalf of Save Bushfield Camp, added, "The current plans are completely incompatible with the site's ecological value and with the sound planning policy. This land is a vital local resource, not only for biodiversity, but for public well-being. It should be protected for future generations, not sacrificed to an unsustainable scheme that will worsen traffic, pollution and water stress in an already stretched area." While both groups work independently, they said they are united in their mission to stop the current development and secure long-term protection of the area, as well as create access for the community. Buy Back Bushfield is building a grassroots ownership model to purchase the land and preserve it. Meanwhile, Save Bushfield Camp continues its work challenging the planning application. Dr. Chambers said it's incredibly important for development proposals to properly consider the ecology and local communities. "It was good to hear directly from residents about Bushfield Camp, and I will continue to use my voice to ensure local developments offer the best outcome for the community." The church commissioners, the landowners, have joined a consortium to develop the site for a business park and hotel. Most of the site will be retained as open space. This is not the first time that calls have been made against building on the site. As previously reported, in 2024, Councillor Jan Warwick argued for the site to be turned into a nature reserve. The developers have been asked for comment.
Greens and Lib Dems triumph in by-elections. Despite this year's local elections being cancelled in Hampshire due to the counties steaming towards becoming a combined unitary authority, some residents in the Winchester district still went to polling stations to vote in a couple of elections. There was a place on Hampshire County Council for the Winchester Eastgate district after Lib Dem councillor Dominic Hiscup's retirement. Also up for grabs was the city's council's Colden Common and Twyford ward after councillor Hannah Greenberg, also a Lib Dem, left her position. The county council seat was won by Lib Dem Paula Ferguson, while the city council's ward was taken by Green Party's Liam Bailey Morgan. "I'm pretty overwhelmed, to be honest," said Councillor Bailey Morgan when asked how he felt about winning the by-election for the Colden Common and Twyford ward in Winchester City Council. He added, it's a real upset and I'm absolutely delighted and still a bit shocked, to be honest. Councillor Paula Ferguson said, "I'd like to thank everybody for their faith in me and those who have given me their vote to elect me as their county councillor. I want to thank all of our Lib Dem supporters who worked really hard during the campaign, and also thank to you, my good friend Dominic Hiscock, who was an excellent county councillor for Eastgate for many years. I think people are showing that they are fed up with the Conservative-led county council and they are actually demanding better for Winchester." Paula Ferguson took 2,027 votes in the by-election for the Hampshire County Council. Next was Lorraine Estelle from the Green Party with 1,033 votes. Third was the Conservative Ian Tate with 786 votes. Reform Russ Kitchen took 577 votes and the Labour's Peter Marsh took 152, with a turnout of 34,041%. There was a 38.32% turnout for the by-election for Winchester Council's Colden Common and Twyford ward. The Conservatives scooped 514 votes, the Lib Dems closed behind at 503, and Labour won just 39 votes. While Reform saw no victories in Hampshire, Nigel Farage's party performed above expectations across the UK, with the word seismic being used liberally to describe the public shift in mood. On Reform's success at the local elections, Conservative and Deputy Leader of Hampshire County Council Jan Warwick said, "It's very different from when you're running for the county or local authority."
And now our final headline for this week, which is "All aboard for a bus journey back in time." Winchester was transported back in time and filled once again with vintage buses as the Friends of King Alfred Buses, FOKAB, running day returned to the city centre. Taking place on Monday, May the 5th, the annual event saw more than 40 vintage buses on show, with many giving hundreds of passengers rides around the Winchester district on routes that were served by the former bus company. The highlight of the day was the unveiling of the Leyland Titan, which was giving its first public rides. The bus was inaugurated by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith, as well as Richard Chisnell, who's the grandson of the FOKAB founder, Robert Chisnell, and is its current president. Councillor Gordon-Smith called the day a great occasion, and he said, "It's a great tradition with historic bits of machinery. I love the history of it, and I've met the grandson of the founder. It's a living history. It's great fun. And it attracts tourists. I think it is wonderful. James Freeman, chair of FOKAB, said, "This is the culmination of 35 years of work. This bus has been in our collection since 1990, and this is its first trip. It is an amazing thing to witness. It's wonderful to have it running as part of our annual running day. Attendees were able to ride on some of the buses maintained by the charity, FOKAB, throughout the running day, with the vehicles giving free trips across the network, made up from the old routes that operated in and around the city in the 1950s and the 1960s. The Friends of King Alfred Buses is made up of a large group of dedicated volunteers who painstakingly renovate and maintain the fleet of vehicles. Their running days are a highlight of the city's calendar and take place on New Year's Day and May Bank Holiday. This year, FOKAB also celebrates its 40th anniversary with a special event on Saturday, May 31st. That will be held at the Winchester Cattle Market car park, and the group's fleet of vehicles will be on display in a circular amphitheatre arrangement from 12 noon to 4 p.m. The event will feature a frequent shuttle service to and from the Broadway. And this article is accompanied by a magnificent photograph of the bus. It also has in front of it James Freeman, who I assume is the driver, Maureen and Richard Chisnell, the mayor, Russell Gordon Smith, and Mary Curry. The bus, and I don't know when the bus was built, but these buses were made by the thousands, probably either side of World War II. And the thing that I like particularly about this picture is the little handle. So some of you will probably remember that in the olden days, the destination panel was probably a cloth roller. And the driver, or I suppose even the conductor, at the end of the route, would climb up on the front of the bus, and there was a little handle, and these are double-decker buses, and with this little handle, he would then rotate the cloth destination indicator, taking it back from wherever it came to where it's going to. And you can just see that little handle in the picture, which is quite magnificent. Anyway, onwards.
That concludes the headline stories, and now we continue with the death announcements and Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, First Person, and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Avery, Brian Kevin Avery, on the 12th of April, aged 68. Broomhill, Maureen Broomhill, who died on the 12th of April after a long illness. Driver, William John Driver, died on the 9th of April at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 83. Dunn, Peter Dunn, died peacefully on the 17th of April, aged 73. Ellis, Janet Felicity Ellis, died peacefully at Winchester Heights Care Home, aged 92. Hall, Barbara Ann Hall, née Pierce, died peacefully at home on the 29th of April, aged 94, and Barbara Hall was a founder member and president of Friends of Hyde Abbey Gardens. Hill, Pamela Maureen Hill, died peacefully on the 19th of April, aged 95. Larden, Alice Elizabeth Larden, died peacefully on the 3rd of April, aged 101. Lilyman, Roy Kenneth Lilyman, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 13th of April. Pill, Elizabeth Rosemary Pill, died peacefully at home on the 21st of April, aged 93. Skeet, Ian Peter Hasler Skeet, died peacefully at home on the 16th of April, aged 96. Taplin, Sheila Margaret Taplin, died on the 22nd of April, aged 92. Watson, Joe Watson, died on the 20th of April at St Giles Hill Care Home. And Willie, Martin Willey died peacefully after a short illness on the 29th of March, aged 76. Now, Andrew, we have a Christian comment, please.
This week's Christian comment is entitled What Happens When the Pope Dies, and was obviously written before the announcement which occurred yesterday. Pope Francis saw one last Easter Sunday before he died, blessed his people, and went out into St. Peter's Square when he must have known he was close to death. We would be sure it was what he wanted, however much it cost him physically. He waved his goodbyes to us. After his recent health problems, we had all relaxed into hope, not very realistically. So his death was a shock, but not a surprise. Now the conclave has been called to choose a new pope, and all the cardinals under the age of 80, that's around 135 of them, they will meet in the Sistine Chapel and will keep voting until they achieve a majority. This is the sixth election that I have lived through, the sixth time that people inform themselves about the process and the timeline and discuss how do they achieve black and white smoke, to mark the unsuccessful and then the successful vote. This time, at least, there is the recent film Conclave, based on a book by Robert Harris, for people to do their revision on the process. My family watched the funeral of Pope John the 13th crowded around our tiny black and white TV in 1963, and then heard of the election of Paul VI. There was the shock of John Paul I dying a month after his election in 78. Then came the first non-Italian pope in centuries. John Paul II, and he was Polish, a matter of great pride to my Polish friends, and the first pope I saw in real life when he visited the UK in 1982. The first reigning pope to do so. The surprise when Pope Benedict XVI resigned, and then when Pope Francis was elected. Some of us were hearing about it and watching it on a smartphone at St. Peter's Parish Centre in Winchester while we were running a youth group session. That was March 2013. The papal election process, centuries old and unchanged, but in 50 years we had come a long way in the technology. It is estimated that there are 1.3 billion Catholics worldwide, and the Pope is our spiritual leader and sets the agenda for us. At our church, the parish of St. Peter and the Winchester Martyrs, we had Lent groups this year, and they were based on scripture, but also on the writings of Pope Francis. Every week I thought again how remarkable he was, and how unflinching in his instructions. He was a pope for the poor, a man who tried to remove some of the more luxurious trappings of his role, a man who washed the feet of the homeless and prisoners. He challenged us all to do more of these for those in need, and not to expect gratitude or praise. He asked us to wonder if we were doing enough, suggesting the answer was probably no. It was thought-provoking and discomforting, but in a good way, a challenge. And now he is gone. But we still have his words to help us along the way. He was a great man, and we can only hope his successor continues in his footsteps. And that was written by Moira Redmond.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor, please, Nikki.
And the first one, headed Chance to Vote, by Stuart Yeldon. Across the UK, local elections were held last week. This is a vital part of our democratic process and an opportunity for the people to have their say. Unfortunately for us in Hampshire, our opportunity has been withheld and we have no vote on May the 1st. This is because the incumbent Conservative councillors at Hampshire County Council voted to postpone this year's elections. This was on the back of the Labour government's plans to reorganise local government. Local elections across Hampshire have effectively been cancelled and there is no planned date to hold them. It was evident from the debates that this led to the that led to this decision that the incumbent councillors feared that their seats were at risk to challenge from Lib Dem, Green and Reform parties. Unfortunately for us, this means that from next week, HCC will be run by unelected councillors who continue in post without a mandate. Writing in the Rumsey Advertiser last month, the Conservative leader of HCC, Councillor Nick Adams-King, explained the financial pickle in which his council finds itself. He noted that despite increasing council tax by 5% this year, their problem is due to rising costs of care of the elderly. This may well be the case, but it should have come as no surprise to local leadership that people age and need care. Indeed, it was his party's government that cut central funding to councils by 40% over the previous 14 years. Furthermore, it was under Tory leadership that council tax increases were held back for political reasons, fully in the knowledge that costs were rising. We can only hope that during their overextended tenure, the incumbent councillors are able to find solutions rather than complain to us about the mess they have created. And that from Stuart Alden, Bracefield, Rumsey.
VE Day, St John's. As we commemorate the 80th anniversary of VE Day, it's fitting to reflect the extraordinary contributions and sacrifices made by St John's ambulance volunteers during World War II. These brave individuals played a crucial role in providing medical care and support to those in need, often under the most challenging and dangerous conditions. During the war, St John's volunteers were at the forefront of the home front effort, offering first aid and medical assistance during air raids, evacuations, and other emergencies. Their dedication and selflessness saved countless lives and provided comfort to many in their darkest hours. These volunteers worked tirelessly, often putting their own lives at risk to ensure the well-being of others. In May, we honour their legacy. Our current volunteers continue to embody the same spirit of service and commitment and will be particularly participating in events taking place to mark the 80th anniversary of VE Day. We invite everyone to join us in remembering and celebrating the invaluable contributions of St John's Ambulance volunteers, both past and present. Their unwavering commitment to helping others is a testament to the enduring spirit of humanity and compassion. And that's from Rear Admiral Simon Williams, CB, CVO, K, St J, Prior of England and the Islands and Chair of St John's Ambulance London.
And this letter is entitled E-Bike Dangers. I read with dismay of the injuries inflicted on a 5-year-old girl on April the 17th by a speeding e-bike on a footpath. From the CCTV footage released, this would appear to be one of the many illegal e-bikes favoured by the fast food delivery riders seen scattered around the city. It's my understanding that in the UK, electrically assisted bikes, pedelecs, are limited in power to 250 watts, with assistance up to the speed of 15 miles per hour only, and must be physically pedalled for the assistance to become active. The ubiquitous illegal bikes have no such restrictions and are capable of speeds up to 50 miles per hour via a throttle. That is faster than a learner motorcycle, and they are invariably unregistered, uninsured, and ridden by unlicensed masked riders. This terrible accident was inevitable, I'm afraid, as long as no effort is made to remove these machines from the roads, and more importantly, the footpaths. One dark evening earlier this year, I encountered a rider on one of these bikes carrying a fast food backpack, dressed totally in black, displaying no lights or reflectors, making his way up the M3 from the Hockley Junction towards Dwinall. This I reported immediately to the police for his own and others' safety. I've heard nothing since, and these bikes are still delivering fast food around Winchester. Now, before the keyboard warriors reprimand me for criticizing someone just making a living, had I struck him, no doubt I would have been breathalyzed, had to produce my driving license, my expensive insurance, and had to pay for the damage to my own car. Our local police are undoubtedly understaffed and overworked, but in light of this latest terrible accident, surely the time has come to crack down and enforce the law before a family has to live with far worse consequences. And that's from Bob Martin, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
And from Jenny Town, headed Need for Buses. I was flabbergasted to read in the Andover Advertiser, brackets, and also the Hampshire Chronicle, letters, editor, brackets, that the council and Stagecoach held a special event for the free bus service to Winchester. The article states that Stagecoach hopes to encourage more people to experience the convenience of public transport. Vast swathes of Andover and surrounding villages have all been left with no bus service at all. Therefore, we are unable to get into town to catch the free 75 bus to Winchester. We have been told that we can dial up a community service and pay between £2.50 and £5 per person per trip from a local bus stop to town. This might sound like a small amount to many, but certainly not to all the pensioners who are managing on a small budget. Apart from the monetary factor, many older people who use the buses have no other form of social interaction. They are now left lonely and isolated. Furthermore, unless they have access to a computer, they will be unable to shop online. It is beyond the bounds of possibility to have buses once or twice... Sorry, is it beyond the bounds of possibility to have buses once or twice a week, serving all those who have lost their bus service? Perhaps Stagecoach could redirect a couple of the many, largely empty, buses serving routes 1, 2 and 3 to reconnect our villages and bring a little happiness to a lot of people. And that from Jenny Town, Holly Walk, Andover.
Sad reality. Independent businesses are the life and soul of every community. They are examples of their synergy with residents and visitors alike, chronicle May the 1st. Small businesses provide personal level of friendly engagement. When yet another retailer bites the dust, we must all be sad and perhaps a little angry. Sadly, those with little or no small business experience who apply further taxation do not seem to realise that small, medium-sized enterprises hire people who pay tax and spend their money on goods also have tax. A business that closes is a loss to our community. Lower taxation creates opportunity and provides confidence for businesses to invest. Together with extreme increases of central government taxation, local taxation hits our small businesses to the point where closures become a sad reality. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
The question of new parking charges. I feel I must write in support of the petition against parking charges at Danebury near Stockbridge. Amelie is quite right regarding the £3.20. This was the original notice posted at Danebury 2 weeks ago. Subsequently, this was removed by Hampshire County Council staff and replaced by a new notice detailing the revised charges. This was either a huge administrative error or more likely, a mechanism whereby we, the gullible public, are told bad news, only to find out that it's not that bad after all, and we're expected to be grateful. This is very popular in national politics at the moment, for example, the recent budget scares. Neither of these two options reflects well on HCC. The HCC spokesman said extensive consultations took place. It certainly did not extend to the users of Danebury. If this was on the agenda in early 2024, why did they not have the courtesy to tell Amelie before she started her business. The spokesman also implies that, quote-unquote, vital social care is at risk if these charges are not implemented. This is frankly disingenuous. To suggest the social care organization is at risk due to free parking and Danebury is utter nonsense. Finally, on the subject of money, I cannot for the life of me see how the HCC can get a return on its investment in a new car park, ticket machines, and enforcement staff. Perhaps HCC should publish its figures. And this was sent in by Roger Perrin, Brookway, Anna Valley, and is accompanied by a photograph of a very cheerful Amelie Saville at her coffee van at Danebury Hill and serving out to somebody a cup of lovely hot fresh coffee.
Thank you. And now we move on to Chronicle editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Which is headed, "It's too late to save Bushfield Camp." Bushfield Camp, the former base just south of Winchester, has stood largely unused since it closed in the 1970s. Gradually, nature started to reclaim it, and it turned into not a brownfield site, but a greeny brownfield one. But all along, the landowners, the church commissioners, had ambitions to redevelop it. In the 1980s, it was a potential site for a Tesco superstore, but fell foul of the planners. Tesco eventually opened a store in Winnall in the 1990s. While the landowner made plans, nature rejuvenated much of it, so that parts are now designated sites of importance for nature conservation, SINCS. However, a key decision was made some 15 years ago to earmark the land for potential redevelopment. The campaign that we report on in this week's issue should have been fought when the then Conservative-controlled City Council was considering its local plan. Make no mistake, Bushfield Camp is going to be redeveloped. Buyback Bushfield is hoping to raise funds to purchase the site, but it is currently worth millions, perhaps tens of millions, to the church commissioners, as it already has designation earmarking it for development, even if no planning application has yet been submitted. It should also be stated that most of the site will not be developed and will be retained for conservation and recreation. The development will largely go on the southern part of the camp that the buildings and the parade ground were. The Chronicle is not criticising the campaigners, even if they are fighting a losing battle. Their pressure will be important to hold the developers' feet to the fire to ensure that there is no backtracking on its environmental promises.
Thank you. Now we have first person, please, Norma.
And this is Reflections on VE Day by Kimberly Barber. Back when I was a teenager, we were set a school project about World War II. For my project, I remember interviewing residents at a care home where my mum worked. I still clearly remember 30 years later sitting in their rooms, dictaphone in hand, reading out my questions and listening to their answers. I can remember the smell of the care home, how hot it was in there, always was, and the rooms, and they all sat in the lounge where they were doing puzzles, the extremely loud television, and the waft of the soft boiled vegetables coming from the kitchen. I think I was allowed to interview the residents as a way to keep me busy, but also occupy the residents who loved having someone to talk to and tell their stories to. Listening to their Second World War memories was an experience that most likely sparked my journalism career, along with a school IT lesson on how to put together a newspaper, I hope the schools still do this, and ignited a desire to document and tell people's stories. The school project was submitted, most likely in a storage box, and lost along the way to adulthood. Not intentionally, a fire took away a lot of what my mum had in storage and we moved countless times. But the residents' tales of courage, resilience and hope left a mark on me, and I believe it's crucial to continue sharing these stories to honour their legacy. As we approach the 80th anniversary of the VE Day, it's heartwarming to see so many communities coming together to celebrate this significant milestone. VE Day, or Victory in Europe Day, marks the end of the Second World War in Europe on 8th of May 1945. It was a day of immense relief and joy, as long and brutal conflict that had ravaged the continent finally came to an end. It's truly wonderful to witness the flurry of activity as neighbourhoods prepare for the events this week and reflect on celebrations held last weekend. In particular, it has been fantastic to see Swanmore, my village, its primary school and the parish council, led by ACSO Gary McCulloch, put on such a great range of events, building up to a fun community event on Saturday at the Rec. These gatherings are not just about remembering the past, but also about honouring the sacrifices made by millions of people during the war. Soldiers, civilians and resistant fighters all played crucial roles in the fight against the tyranny and oppression. Many gave their lives, and countless others endured unimaginable hardships. By commemorating VE Day, we pay a tribute to their bravery and resilience, ensuring that their sacrifices are never forgotten. VE Day serves as a reminder of the importance of the peace and unity. The end of the Second World War brought about a new era of cooperation and collaboration amongst nations, something we could perhaps reflect on and try to learn from. Life moves in circles, and it's important that we learn lessons from the past so as not to repeat them. Just as history tends to repeat itself, this week our newest recruit, Eve Thompson, went out to a care home in Sutton Scotney to listen to the stories of some of its residents and hear their memories of VE Day. Eve officially starts at the Chronicle next month after she finishes her journalism degree at the University of Winchester. Keen, young and enthusiastic for what lies ahead. Hopefully this experience has sparked a desire in her to report and record these incredible memories. As time moves on and we get further away from VE Day, there are fewer people alive who actually remember it. Local newspapers play a crucial role in documenting what it was like at the time, teaching the younger generation about the horrors of war, and continuing to commemorate VE Day, we ensure that the lessons of the past are passed down to future generations. Most importantly, VE Day symbolises hope and the triumph of human spirit over adversity. It reminds us that even in the darkest times, there's always the possibility of a brighter future.
Thank you. Now, Andrew, you've had a couple of items from Belgarum, please.
Yeah. Yes, this is Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. And the first is entitled From Beer to Soberton, which, as I'll describe later, is actually quite a clever phrasing. A travel company is embarking on a cycle challenge that is finishing in a Hampshire village. We Love Lucid, the UK's first alcohol-free travel company, are hosting a 120-mile group cycling event on May the 17th from the town of Beer in Devon to Soberton to celebrate the sober lifestyle. Participants will cycle along the south coast from Beering to Bournemouth and then heading through the New Forest and Southampton and on to Soberton. Those taking part can join the route at any stage within the 120-mile passage. Founder of We Love Lucid, Lauren Bernison, said, "It's great to show how fulfilling the sober lifestyle is. We want to change the perception about life without alcohol. Events like this are a chance to show how positive and motivating sober life is. And Miss Burnson said, with the nicer weather coming out, it has made training a lot more positive as there's less pressure now, and whilst there's pain and discomfort, it's only temporary. UK alcohol-free drinks brand Jump Ship Brewing are sponsors and will supply alcohol-free beers. And this is accompanied by a photograph of some of the cyclists on a previous ride. And I've heard of and been to Beer in Devon, but I didn't realise we had a town called Soberton in the area. So from beer to Soberton for an alcohol-free company, I think is rather clever. The next article is headlined, The Red Arrows Over Arsford. The Red Arrows jetted across Hampshire as part of the VE Day events marking the end of the Second World War in Europe in 1945. Glenn Gilbertson captured the display team at 2 p.m. on Monday, May the 5th, as it passed over Arsford after taking part in the VE Day commemoration flypast over Buckingham Palace. The Royal Air Force's aerobatic team will be joining 22 other aircraft for a flypast over Buckingham Palace. A Lancaster bomber from the Battle of Britain Memorial flight, a Typhoon, an A400M Atlas, a C-17 Globemaster, Rivet Joint and Poseidon aircraft were all expected to fly. And after flying over Hampshire, the Red Arrows flew to Bournemouth Airport. And this is accompanied by a photograph taken by Glenn Gilbertson of five of the RAF Red Arrows flying over Arsford on a lovely blue sky, a little bit of cloud there, on Monday.
Thank you. Now we have this week's announcements. We start with what's on. There's four items. Firstly, on the 18th of May, which is a Sunday, the Allsford Watercress Festival starts from 10 o'clock. It's a free event. Everything around watercress, food and drink stalls, cookery demonstrations, and you can access it by bus or by train using the Watercress Railway Park and Ride from Ropley. But that's on 18th of May from 10 o'clock till 4 o'clock, I think it is. And there's music, demonstrations, everything. On Saturday the 24th of May at 7:30 p.m. at the Theatre Royal in Winchester, there's a performance by opera star Sir Willard White, who actually was on the television last night as part of the VE Day concert outside Buckingham Palace. He is performing A Night of Reminiscence and Music, and he'll be joined by the Kamaira Guitar Duo. If you want more information, that's from the Theatre Royal box office. On the 15th of May, Winchester University West Downs Centre is hosting a free exhibition of students' design and digital developments between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. And they've got students who've been working in the technology side putting on demonstrations. Finally, there is between July the 19th and September the 7th at Hinton Ampner, which is National Trust, there's an interactive book trail. It's the Very Hungry Caterpillar Trail, and it's recommended for children aged 3 to 6. And the trail is free, but of course visitors will have to pay the National Trust admission fee unless you are members of the National Trust. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 9th of May at 5:25 a.m. and begins at 8:39 p.m. And next Wednesday the 14th of May, it ends at 5:17 a.m. and begins at 8:47 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with this recording, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki.
And this one headed Unexploded Bomb at the Weirs. The Weirs in Winchester was cordoned off after an unexploded bomb was found in the river. the unexploded device was discovered in the River Itchen in the early hours of Saturday, May the 3rd. Police cordoned off the area, including parts of Wharf Hill and the Weirs, with explosive ordnance disposal personnel from the army sent to dispose of the device. According to a police spokesman, police were made aware of the device at approximately 6 a.m. this morning. The spokesperson said, "We have advised people who live nearby. The area has been cordoned off, no one was evacuated, and it was unclear how it was found." And there's a picture of the police cars, absolutely nobody round, and the cordoned off area. Quite exciting.
Philippa recounts war memories for VE Day. This week, many will celebrate the 80th anniversary of VE Day, joining in solidarity to commemorate the end of the war that shaped our society. An instrumental figure during this is Mrs. Philippa Weatherly, 101, who not only endured World War II, but took an active role. Born in London, Mrs. Weatherly moved to Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe, after her father saw conflict looming. Days after moving away, World War II began, and she was determined to serve. After passing her driving test at 17, Mrs. Weatherly joined the Rhodesian Army, which was the beginning of her extended war efforts. Mrs. Weatherly, who now lives in Sutton Manor in Sutton Scotney, said, "My aim was to come back to England, so when I was 18, I caught a troop ship and joined the Fanny, First Aid Nursing Yeomanry. My friend and I were the babies of the group. Most of the members were older and married. She was young and with no nursing ability, Mrs. Weatherly became an offshoot of the Fanny, where she learned how to drive ambulances and was taught motor engineering skills. She said, if you were a proper Fanny, you had to be trained nurse and you were sent abroad, but I was too young. I'd come to England to be sent abroad, but they didn't let me go, so I wasn't in the Red Cross. It was all voluntary work. We worked in ships and sometimes we were up all night driving or we'd do the day shift. We were terribly disciplined. I had a very frightening trip back on a ship from South Africa. It took us 5 weeks to get to Liverpool and we had to zigzag, but it was rather fun. I suppose when you're young you take it for granted. Living through the entirety of the war, she still holds fond memories of her wartime experiences and expresses gratitude for the opportunities it presented. She said, "The war was very romantic. We worked terribly hard and played hard too. We were all in it together. People were sleeping in the underground because of the bombs on the streets and in dugouts. We were all such friends. I lost cousins and I lost lots of people and we had lots of sadness, but I have to say that we were too busy and didn't have time to dwell on it." Mrs. Weatherly was able to experience the momentous occasion and spectacular celebrations firsthand. She said, "I was in London when I first heard that the war was over. I went straight up to the palace and joined the crowd. I was with a friend much older than me and we swirled around with everybody. Then her father had a room at the Ritz and we went up there at about 1 a.m. It was lovely. I thoroughly enjoyed my time serving. They were some of the best years. Now, with 5 grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren, Mrs. Weatherly lives in Sutton, Scotney. And there is a lovely picture of Mrs. Weatherly holding up a picture of herself with the group of the Fannies. And she's sitting in her chair, smiling. And she really doesn't look 101.
We have a theme to today, I think, in terms of age. Brother John, only 85, sets off on a mega bus trip. An 85-year-old man has set off on a nationwide bus trip. Brother John Green is undertaking the adventure to raise funds and awareness of the Hospital St. Cross in Winchester, where he has lived since 2015. The trip will take Brother John from the almshouse around the UK, with John estimating it will take approximately 6 weeks. And he said, "It's going to be interesting, I think, particularly because I'm going to meet all sorts of people." John will be travelling around the country by bus on Mondays to Friday using his National Concessionary Bus Pass. He will then spend weekends resting, writing updates on his journey and meeting with friends. And he said, "It will be fun and give me a chance to meet the people who live there." John continued, "What I'm looking forward to is when I get to Edinburgh, and I'm going to cross the river to where I spent most of my youth, which will be quite fun. Where the estate where we lived was, there was an airfield and agriculture, but the airfield is gone now, and a new town has been built on it. And where our home was is a new office for Shell Oil. All sorts of changes have been made, and I will like it all the same." Alongside raising awareness of the almshouse, which still has space for new residents, John is also hoping to raise funds for essential restoration work projects, including for the 12th century chapel. John set off on his journey from the Hospital St. Cross on Thursday, May the 1st, starting his trip by travelling on a vintage bus provided by the Friends of King Alfred Buses to Winchester Bus Station, where he then conducted his journey. Where he continued his journey. He was seen off by a crowd of people, including other brothers from the St. Cross Almshouse, as well as the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Russell Gordon Smith. Councillor Gordon Smith expressed his great admiration for John going on this adventure. "It's always a great joy to have anything to do with St. Cross. They are just the most wonderful group of people. And this journey will raise awareness for St. Cross and almshouses in general." Also present was Nick Phillips, who's the CEO of the Almshouse Association. And he said, "Being amongst the Brothers of St. Cross reflects the great strength of the almshouse movement. A brotherhood, a community, and good neighbours. Brother John is using his adventure to highlight to the world the great impact of this ancient community housing model. And we are most grateful to him for sharing the message. Brother John shows terrific ingenuity and a thirst for adventure. He'll have a great time, as will those he meets." The Hospital of St. Cross is the UK's oldest almshouse still in continuous use, and it will celebrate the 900th anniversary of its founding in 2032. And this is accompanied by a couple of photographs, the brothers and the mayor there with hats off, cheering him on, and of course the old bus from lovely green single decker bus which John started his journey on.
How did you end up with all the bus stories, Andrew, this morning?
Perhaps there's a theme.
Could be.
And this is how it's spelt. Unbelievable scene causes a buzz in the High Street. A swarm of bees has descended on Winchester High Street in a scene looking like something out of the Book of Exodus. The insects were seen flying in a cluster near the Ivy restaurant on the afternoon of Thursday, May the 1st. Honeybees swarm naturally on warm, sunny days in the UK between May and July. Often there is a peak on a fine day after poor weather, when temperatures approach the high teens. A real honeybee swarm can be extremely dramatic, involving many thousands of bees in a large, noisy cloud. However, they normally settle in a cluster within 15 minutes. This is the hottest May 1st on record, with temperatures in some parts of the UK reaching 28 degrees centigrade. In Winchester, the highest temperature was listed at 27. The warm weather is expected to last until Friday, May the 2nd. The highest temperature nationally was recorded at Kew Gardens, southwest London, according to the Times. And there's a wonderful photograph because it's got all the bees, I mean really hundreds of bees, and a pack of brightly coloured balloons, and a man in shorts and a pink T-shirt bending down, whether he's ducking them or just posing for the photograph. But he's got pink sunglasses to match the pink shirt, and the effect of the whole thing is wonderful.
Dad and stepson have a real taste for success. A father and stepson duo who have taken over the popular Meon Valley Cafe are already seeing success, with people travelling miles to try their bacon. Hamish Stuart Ross, 55, and his stepson, Troy Kempster, 22, took on the Breakfast Club, formerly Anna's Kitchen, in February. The small cafe can be found just off the A334 at Shedfield Equestrian Centre in Unit 8. Mr. Stuart Ross, who was fitting swimming pools before taking on the cafe, said, "I came for breakfast and saw the lease was up for sale. I knew Tory was interested in starting a food truck, but I called him up and asked if he wanted to do the cafe instead, and here we are." Despite only being behind the counter for a few months, word of mouth has meant that people are travelling from Portsmouth and even Chichester. Biker groups are making the Breakfast Club a destination for their meetups. Mr. Kempster, who started out as a pot washer at the Brushmaker's Arms in Upham around 6 years ago, took on the cafe at the same time as becoming a father. He said, "It's been a lot, but we haven't had a day off yet. We're just pushing homemade produce. Our Scotch eggs are homemade, and we use Meon Valley butchers and local farms. All our Scottish sausages are from Scotland, and it's all good stuff." The 22-year-old has big plans for the cafe, with hopes to open for evening service, serving up burgers and Portuguese food. There are plans to have a barbecue in the summer. The Breakfast Club is open from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. And there's a picture of father and stepson in front of their cafe.
Access help from home. Age Concern Hampshire is helping older people stay independent with its Help at Home service. The charity's initiative aims to support the growing number of older adults who want to continue living in their own homes. The Office for National Statistics predicts that by 2041, more than 20 million people in the UK will be aged 65 and over. This highlights the increasing demand for services that assist older individuals in maintaining their independence. Age Concern Hampshire's Home Helpers provide personalised support to make everyday tasks more manageable for older people. Hannah Park, Head of Operations at Age Concern Hampshire, said, "Our home helpers are passionate about offering tailored support that enables older people to live independently and comfortably in their own homes. Our services are personalised to meet the specific needs of each individual, empowering them to maintain their independence. The Help at Home service offers a range of support, including help with housework, laundry, shopping, meal preparation, companionship, trips out, dog walking, and more. Research shows that 4.3 million older people in the UK live alone, and many face challenges in managing daily tasks as they age. For many, staying in their own homes is a top priority. For further details or to arrange an assessment, call 01962 868 545.
Celebrating 125-year history, A historic waterworks has opened its doors to the public to celebrate its 125th anniversary. Twyford Waterworks, which first opened in 1900, welcomed visitors on Sunday, May the 4th and Monday, May the 5th. Visitors had the opportunity to see the machinery in action up close and see the Hathorn's Davy steam pumping engine, large Ruston diesel pumping engines, the 1895 Crossley gas engine and other smaller pumps in operation. You ought to be reading this, not me. The waterworks history dates back to 1898 when the wells were dug, and by 1900 the waterworks had started to pump fresh, clean water. Its role in supplying water has remained unchanged, although the technology has evolved over the years. And there's a picture of someone polishing one of these amazing engines, the John Fowler and Company Leeds Engineers. Anyway, it's very impressive.
It is a magnificent day out.
I've seen it, actually. It is.
Muddy Stilettos hails magnificent seven winners. A city centre saloon was, or salon, rather, was one of seven Winchester businesses hailed this year's Muddy Stilettos Awards. Guy Cremer's salon in Parchment Street won the award of Best Hair Salon after receiving votes from their satisfied customers. It comes only weeks after it's named Hampshire Chronicle's Hairdresser of the Year. Salon director Johnny Engstrom said, "We're thrilled to have won this prestigious competition as a local businesses. It's very exciting. We've had many people congratulating us, coming in, calling up, sending cards and flowers. Our staff is stoked. It is important as a local business to be recognised. As a salon, we keep striving to keep our clients beautiful." The award, which has been running for 12 years, has seen more than 500,000 people voting for their favourite businesses across 21 categories. Sass and Edge of Market Street also won the ceremony's top prize, being awarded as the winner of the regional's Women's Style category. Other winners locally include Long Barn in Alresford, Best Lifestyle Store, while other finalists include the Theatre Royal Winchester, Best Arts and Culture and Theatre, 91 Health and Beauty, Best Beauty Salon, Stroke Clinic, and Forte's Kitchen, Best Venue. A hotel in Stockbridge has been crowned the best in Hampshire. The Grosvenor has been hailed the best hotel in 2025 Muddy Stilettos Regional Awards. The Grosvenor Hotel, known for its dining experiences and welcoming atmosphere, was recognised as the best hotel in the Test Valley area. The Muddy Stilettos Regional Awards, sponsored by Partridge of Hampshire, received hundreds of thousands of votes from readers of the Lifestyle website. Hero Brown, founder and editor-in-chief of Muddy Stilettos, said, "I set up these awards 12 years ago to give local lifestyle indies a chance to shine. It has been an honour to showcase the most creative, innovative lifestyle businesses across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight in partnership with our local sponsor Partridge of Hampshire. The response to this year's Muddy Awards has been incredible, with thousands voting to support an amazing array of local businesses, big and small. The other winners in the Test Valley area were the Pete's Spade Inn in Longstock, which was named the best boutique stay, and winners from each category will now go through to the 2025 National Awards. Five businesses in each category will be picked by the Muddy Stilettos editors to go through to the national finals, with the best of the best winners crowned in June 2025. And there's a picture of the Guy Cremer Salon team outside their premises, and there's also a picture of the front of the Grosvenor Hotel with its bow-fronted windows.
A mammoth event to appear at Marwell Zoo. A fearsome saber-toothed tiger, a giant woolly mammoth built from toy bricks, are set to make an appearance at Marwell Zoo this summer. This jaw-dropping extinction event will feature more than 20 life-size recreations of species that have been lost through time, including a 6-meter-long woolly mammoth, a hissing Titan boa, and a giant ground sloth. These creatures, all crafted from more than 2 million toy bricks, will provide visitors with the unique opportunity to come face to face with the lost legends of the prehistoric world. Explorers visiting the zoo will be given a map and a chance to embark on a journey across the zoo's 140 acres of parkland, meeting the life-sized recreations along the way. There will also be photo opportunities with a giant dinosaur egg and a dodo. Visitors to the Extinction Base Camp can assist in building a massive saber-toothed tiger and create their own mini mammoth or dodo to take home. Marwell Zoo's Senior Events Manager, Nikki Cole, said, "We're incredibly excited to launch Extinction at Marwell and do that this summer. A world-first collection of spectacular toy brick sculptures. This immersive trail will take families on an unforgettable journey through time as they discover lost species brick by brick. From marveling at a towering moropus to meeting a squawking terror bird and even hearing a dire wolf's howl with the press of a button." Marwell Zoo is offering an early bird ticket saving of 25% off the on-the-day ticket price until Saturday, the 31st of May. Those who book early will be entered into a prize draw to win a VIP behind-the-scenes trip to the workshop where the sculptures are being created. Extinction will be on display from Saturday, July 19th, until Sunday, September the 7th, and is included with general admission tickets to the zoo. Visitors to Marwell Zoo contribute to conservation projects both in the UK and around the world. To book tickets for the event, please visit the Marwell Zoo website. And that is accompanied by a couple of photographs. There's one there. They're all made out of, I assume they're, it doesn't say the word Lego, but I assume they look like Lego bricks. So the enormous jaw of this tiger, and it all looks rather exciting.
Driver ban after illegal car meets. A dangerous driver has had his car confiscated and has been banned from driving after attending illegal car meets. Toby Clarkson, 23, of London Road in Mickleham, Surrey, was caught driving dangerously in his white BMW at a car meet in Southampton on the evening of September the 21st, 2024. The meet began at Winchester Park and Ride, before moving to Southampton, Eastleigh, Chandler's Ford, Fareham, and ending at Southsea Seafront after midnight. Through CCTV, social media, and dashcam footage, he was found drifting around a roundabout on Harbour Parade in Southampton, in between crowds of people, risking injuring or killing them. Just to explain drifting, because I needed to explain this. It's going round in a circle, but sliding as you go round. It's really out of control. Clarkson was sentenced on April the 29th at Southampton Crown Court after pleading guilty to dangerous driving, using a car in a manner likely to cause danger, and four counts of failing to give information relating to the identification of a driver. Clarkson received 24 weeks in prison, suspended for a year, 180 hours of unpaid work, a 3-year driving ban with an extended retest to get his license back, and his car confiscated by the leasing company it belonged to. He has also been ordered to attend a 26-day program led by the probation service for the car crime and has received a £154 surcharge and £85 of costs. Superintendent Mark Lewis, head of the Rhodes Policing Unit, said, Clarkson now has a criminal record. He has been banned from driving and has had his car taken away from him. This is exactly what anyone driving like this in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight should expect to happen to them. We could be the next person knocking on your door. Those attending the event blocked roads and motorists and at one point delayed an ambulance on a blue light run. Superintendent Lewis said, "To risk maiming or killing people for the sake of something so immature, the driver should be embarrassed and ashamed of his actions." Footage obtained by officers shows how his incredibly selfish actions blocked the roads for countless motorists, including an ambulance on a blue light run, potentially putting further lives at risk. This case should act as a warning that just because you drive home in your car from one of these meets, it doesn't mean you have gotten away with it. And there is a photograph of a roundabout. And surrounding the roundabout is a crowd of people, at least, I would say, five deep, and on the roundabout itself, and possibly a white car, could be the BMW, sliding round it at obviously great speed, and at any point he could just spin off into those crowds of people.
DOV official visits school to see renovations. A Department of Education official visited a Winchester school to see the renovations of its science block. Dr. Jonathan Dewsbury visited the Henry Beaufort School on Tuesday, April the 22nd, to see the work, which is due to be completed in June. The new science block will feature 8 new laboratories for the school. The renovation is an example of how the school and Hampshire County Council are improving the sustainability of their estate, reducing the carbon footprint and becoming more energy efficient. The building will benefit from new thermally efficient double glazed and low maintenance units. The brickwork and other panels will be insulated and the roof recovered with high performance felt with additional insulation. Where needed, lighting will be replaced with low-energy LED lighting, which will provide a better quality of light, enhancing the teaching spaces and reducing energy costs. Sue Hurl, head teacher, said, "We are looking forward to the completion of this project and the benefits it will bring our school community, providing 8 high-tech laboratories that will complement the excellent science teaching and learning at the Henry Beaufort School." And there's a picture of Dr. Johnson Dewsby visiting the school with some of the boys and some of the contractors.
Hundreds get in line for a free cup of tea. Hundreds of people flock to a city centre bubble tea store to celebrate National Bubble Tea Day 2025. On Wednesday, April 30th, CUPP on the High Street celebrated the big day by releasing 3 new boba teas in collaboration with Ellie Goulding and Gemma Fair's wellness brand, Every State. The first 100 customers received a free boba drink. And to continue the savings, all drinks will be 25% off for the rest of the day. One of the first in the queue was Winchester resident and CUP supporter, Aaron Wolfenden. And he said, "It's good to have a day that celebrates these drinks. It really shows how popular they are." This CUP CUPP X Every State collaboration involves 3 new exclusive drinks that are centered around wellness, which contain powerful ingredients like functional mushrooms, calming reishi, and focusing enhancing lion's mane. If I can insert an editorial comment at this point, although I've just read that, I have absolutely no idea what functional mushrooms are.
We're all looking bemused.
And focus enhancing lion's mane. But anyway, back to the article. Today is something that we start planning in early January. And we spend a lot of time making every single event like this one, different. These wellness-centered boba teas are designed to focus on energy and focus as they add a functional benefit to the traditional bubble tea. And two things, apart from the fact that I have no idea what's going on. Yeah, I don't understand any of what I've just read, but never mind. And the other thing is, there's a queue, a vast, vast queue of people on the high street, all queuing up for a free cup of tea. It's all beyond me.
Okay, I've got to be serious now. Car dealership gift to autistic musician. A Hampshire car dealer, used car dealer, has gifted a free car to an autistic musician in need. Jack Pook, 57, of Ashburton Road, Alsford, had been left without a car for approximately 6 months after his previous vehicle was written off last year. Unable to work, Jack had been appealing to car dealerships across the area to see if they can give him a car so he can play piano at gigs to raise money for charity. Getting in touch with Prudential Motors in Whitchurch, sales representative Ahmed Awan arranged for Jack to be given a 2014 Ford Mondeo. Ahmed said, "The thing with Jack is he contacted us and we got to hear his story, which was really inspirational. He had been homeless for a while in the past and he does a lot of charity work. But he did not let his life get to him. He's doing the best he can for himself and for other people. We thought it would be a good opportunity to help him. The least we could do is provide him a car, which meant a little to us, but a lot to him. We got the car last month in a part exchange, and we thought it might suit him." Ahmed said that the dealership would help Jack with any issues with the car he might encounter, adding, "I liked him and his story, so I spoke to my manager and he okayed it." According to Ahmed, Prudential Motors would have sold the car for approximately £2,000. Jack was able to visit Prudential Motors with his assistant's dog, Buddy, to see the car, with Ahmed handling over the keys. Jack said, "I think it is a win in my life. I think Prudential Motors demonstrated an excellent example of compassionate business. The car we got is great. The most important thing is it needed a large boot so it could fit my piano and transport it to various gigs. Without a car, I cannot play my music to the public. Prudential Motors and Ahmed have been nothing but helpful, and they have treated me like one of their favourite customers. The service they have given me and the car they have given me, I think they are excellent. With his car, Jack will be able to play his music to raise money for charity. He has previously supported homeless charities and Ukraine in the past, and is now set to raise money for the Alsford Pigs. Jack held a taster gig at Winchester Cathedral on May the 6th from 2:30 p.m. Members of the public were welcome to attend. And there's a photograph of Ahmed Awan and Jack Pook and the car, a really nice-looking silvery Ford Mondeo, wasn't it?
Parents can't afford school fees. The head of Winchester College said parents can no longer afford private school fees after the government's 20% VAT rise. Elizabeth Stone was a panellist at the University of Winchester's Education Question Time hosted by Victoria Derbyshire. During the panel, Elizabeth was asked how the 20% VAT on private school fees had affected Winchester College. She said, "We've had withdrawals of pupils because parents can't afford it." Victoria inquired about the number of withdrawals. Elizabeth said, "Probably single figures so far, but it only came in January. We're expecting a delayed hit of it, as if you have a child in the system, you pull out all stops. There will be several years of deep pain for the sector." She added that more than one school a week has announced its closure since the government announcement, and that Winchester College are absorbing as much as they can along with paying the living wage increases. She said, "I'm not going to stand here and ask for sympathy. I'm well aware that there are not going to be a lot of in it for us." Elizabeth explained that all children are entitled to an education and agrees that those in society who can afford to pay more should pay more. Luke Murphy, Labour MP of Basingstoke, defended the decision, saying the government has had to make difficult decisions due to an issue of economic inheritance, but to support wider education, which will ensure every child has the best education, as is necessary.
Pop-up shop springs open to boost charity. A new pop-up shop selling waffles, milkshakes and smoothies to raise money for charity has opened in Winchester. Events management students from Eastleigh College unveiled their new pop-up shop, Project 13, on the second floor of the Brooks Shopping Centre on Thursday the 1st of May, in aid of charity Naomi House and Jack's Place. Inside the shop, students will be selling waffles, milkshakes and smoothies with a wide variety of flavours every Wednesday to Friday from 9:30 in the morning until 5 in the afternoon. And that's from May the 7th until May the 23rd. Gemma Braybrook, a lecturer in media, marketing and event management at Eastleigh College, said, Project 13 is named after Unit 13, which is a mini dissertation that the students do before they leave. We want to make it practical for them. They are starting up a business from scratch, bringing it to fruition, and to see where it is right now feels incredible. It's the reason why I love doing what I do. I am incredibly proud of every one of them. Every event run by the college is used as a means to raise money for charities, and the pop-up shop will raise money for Naomi's House and Jack's Place. Within a week last year, the students raised just over £750 by running a coffee and cake fundraiser. The idea came from a project and enterprise competition held at the college, where the winning group were awarded the opportunity to put their vision into practice. Student and event leader Phoebe McCormack said, "It's surreal. Every time I think about it too much, it really scares me. We've had so much support, and no matter how stressful it was, we've been supported the whole way through, and it's really great to have this opportunity. As someone who wants to be an entrepreneur in the future, this has given me the tools, and it's like a mini game for me to start and give me experience of learning how it works, starting up a business or event." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the students who are all female. So they're all standing there, and the leader of the group is presenting to them the theme and the idea behind Project 13.
Winchester Business Excellence Awards. Finalist reveals for 2025 awards. Hundreds of entries have been rigorously read, scored and judged as part of the Winchester Business Excellence Awards. The finalists for the 2025 awards, which celebrate and shine a light of top businesses in the Winchester District, have been announced. The awards are organised in partnership with the Hampshire Chronicle, Hampshire Chamber of Commerce and Winchester BID. Hundreds of entries were submitted across the 10 categories, all hoping to secure a spot at the ceremony, which is due to take place at Winchester Cathedral's Pavilion on Thursday, June the 19th at 6:30 p.m. Judging this year's awards, Winchester Business Excellence Awards Winchester BID Executive Director Paul Spencer, NatWest Senior Relationship Manager Tony Castle, Kimberly Barber, Regional Editor for NewsQuest, Zulfia Truscott, BizSpace Regional Manager, and the category sponsors. Kimberly, also editor of the Hampshire Chronicle, said, "It was so interesting to read through all the award entries and nominations. Some businesses had scores of customer testimonials and nominations, while others submitted strong evidence to show their business excellence. It was a delight to see so many recognisable businesses putting themselves forward. Many have done excellent work in the Winchester community, and they all make this city a great place to live. Good luck to them all." Tickets to the evening cost £100. For more information, go to hampshirechronicle.co.uk awards. This year's event is sponsored by Paris Smith, Dutton Gregory, Winchester City Council, Winchester University, Winchester BID, Haisley Enterprise Park and JM Finn. The awards are also supported by Winchester Cathedral Events, NatWest and the Little Kitchen Company, the Theatre Royal and Play to the Crowd. And there are lots of photographs, of the winners and people attending it, many in black tie and formal long dresses, all looking extremely smart and very happy to be seeing these awards being offered.
Daily water leakage cut. Southern Water has had a record-breaking year for leak prevention. Between April 2024 and April 2025, Southern Water reduced its weekly leakage by more than 15%, from 108.1 million litres per day to 91.1 million litres per day. This is a saving of 17 million litres each day, which is enough to serve 35,000 customers. The company credits this success to new technology, including 24,000 acoustic sensors attached to its 15,500 kilometre water network. These sensors detect leaks and send information back to the control centre, which then dispatches one of the 90 leak-busting teams across the region to fix the problem. Tim McMahon, Managing Director of Water, said, "There's been incredible work by our teams around the region finding and fixing the leaks from big pipes far below the ground, which show no trace on the street. Thanks to clever technology, the new control system, we are able to prevent pressure spikes which can burst water mains and work as fast as possible to respond to every reported leak. The company also undertaking its biggest ever water mains replacement program, with 50 kilometre of older PVC pipes to be replaced by the latest technology during 2025. Oh, joy, more digging up roads in the past.
Triathlon attracted both new and old. Monday morning saw a bright and early start for Winchester's triathletes as they set out to complete the ultimate test of endurance. 450 individuals took part in the morning sprint triathlon at King's School Romsey Road, which consisted of a 400-metre swim, a 22-kilometre cycle and a 5-kilometre run. The novice race was half that distance. The winner was Dan Heapy, whose time was 1 hour, 12 minutes and 41 seconds. Later in the day, the novice and junior triathlons were held, where competitors as young as 8 years old were able to get their first taste of this event. Chris Rees, race director, said, "It's all about getting people into the sport of triathlon, hence Tri-Tri, which is spelled T-R-Y-T-R-I, and that's the exciting thing about it. Each year it gets bigger and bigger, and it's always good to have people out and about. We have people running for the charity, as well as people who just enjoy participating and being part of it all. The idea is to make it affordable for people to get into the sport. We've had people go on from this to become GB triathletes, and all sorts. So this is the starting point, a proper grassroots triathlon, which is good. It's been good weather for the athletes compared to last week, as they can be out and about and cool down once they're heading out on the course." Sponsored by NFU Mutual, Winchester, Alton and Wickham, the event showcased Winchester's community spirit. Local or not, everyone came together through their love of athleticism. Hundreds of supporters also came to congratulate their loved ones at the finish line, celebrating with ice cream, drinks and cake. Many athletes were keen to share their victories and experiences after completing the race. Stephanie Young, 59, a first-time triathlete, said, "It was great. I really enjoyed it. I was nervous to start with as it's my first triathlon. I knew I'd be okay with the swim, but the bike was tough with the hills. There's a lot of dedication that goes into it. I started Couch to 5K in September because I didn't run, but I regularly swim and ride a bike, and some of those hills were a bit trickier. My friend and I do a challenge every year, and this year I chose this one. It was fun. Liviu Plesu, 41, a returning triathlete, said, "This is our third year. My son and I are competing, and we love coming back every year. The grounds are amazing. I cycle every day, run and train with my son, and it's part of the lifestyle. I've also done ones in London, the T100, and Winchester, all over the place, really." Mel Barnes, 62, said, "It was my first triathlon in a while, and it was very challenging. Cycling was hard. There are some monstrous hills, but lovely. I was very unprepared, but the best thing to do is to practice running after you get off your bike. Otherwise, to get off and run is a nightmare when you're not trained for it. I'm glad it's done. It was freezing. I didn't have any expectations with timing. I'm just happy to have finished. Tri-Tri began in 2009 and returns annually to Winchester, with hopes of providing an inclusive event for anyone who wants to take part, regardless of age or ability. To find out more or to take part in the next Winchester Triathlon, visit tri-tri, which is tri.co.uk/Winchester-triathlon.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts that we've read, and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. Thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vinson, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.